What is up, everybody? Welcome to the latest edition of Boot Up, the LSU basketball podcast. I'm Cody Worsham, digital media reporter for LSU Athletics. A little bit of a change up in the plans for today's episode. We were hoping to get one of the players on for a sit-down interview. Some scheduling conflicts did not allow that to happen. So instead, we've adapted on the fly, and we are doing a mailbag episode today. I got a few questions from listeners on Twitter and Instagram, so I will answer those questions. Before we do that, and we'll also preview a little bit the Georgia game, I wanted to thank everybody, because you may have seen this on Twitter, if you follow me on Twitter, but after the Kentucky game, obviously a lot of fans were excited, a lot of people tuned into the podcast, and we jumped up to number three in the college sports podcast rankings, which is really cool. That's really cool. We were ahead of like a Kentucky podcast and a Duke podcast. We were ahead of some pretty prominent podcasts out there. So that was really cool to see. And that's all down to you guys for listening, and you gals as well for listening and sharing and all that stuff. So again, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I do put a lot of work into this, but I do it for you. I do it for the fans who just love LSU basketball and want to consume as much LSU basketball content as possible. So thanks so much. Please help us keep growing. If you haven't yet, give us a subscription, rate us, review us, all that stuff. That helps us grow and keep those numbers up there and continue to grow this thing as LSU progresses, because it's been a fun season and we want to keep this thing rolling. So again, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Let's jump straight into some of these questions that listeners submitted on Twitter. You can always follow me at Cody Worsham. Anytime you want to ask me a question, by the way, it doesn't have to be a mailbag episode. Just send me a question and I'll be glad to answer it. But let's start with Matt Mercer at MCM5150. His question is, how do you feel about not being in the top 10? So I'll start by answering here. The latest rankings, the latest polls came out before LSU beat Kentucky on the road. Kentucky was number 5 going into that game. And before that win, LSU didn't have a win over a team that was currently ranked in the top 25. Their best wins were Ole Miss on the road, St. Mary's on a neutral site, Mississippi State on the road, Auburn at home. Those are all really good wins, and those are teams that rank really highly in a lot of the computer polls, but they aren't in the top 25. And so it's hard to get in the top 10 when you don't have a bunch of really, really quality poll wins under your belt. LSU had some chances. They had that 15-point lead against Houston. Houston's only lost one game all year. LSU did not win that game. Part of that, as you can see now, is a credit to Houston, who is really good and who's rolling through the AAC right now. They had the chance against Florida State, who is 19-5 right now and 7-4 in the ACC. And gave up a lead there. Again, that's a good team, but I think those are also experiences that LSU grew from. But it's hard to get in the top 10 when you don't have that quality win. Now, LSU does have that win now. They beat Kentucky. If they take care of Georgia on Saturday, they will certainly move up in the rankings. But in the last polls, they were, I believe, 19th. Yep, pull it up right here. 19th in the AP top 25 and 21st in the coaches poll. And while I think they'll move up, I think the top 10 is still a little bit out of reach. You have a pretty solidified kind of top 10 to 15 right now in the country that all either have better records outright than LSU or just a few better wins. So I think LSU will sneak up there, and depending on how some of the teams in front of them do, that they have a chance to move up. But top 10 is a little bit of a stretch at this point. Now, Tennessee comes to town next week, you win that game, and I think you put yourself there. But, you know, I don't pay a whole lot of attention to the polls, as you kind of heard there. I had to go look at it. I pay more attention to the stuff that the committee looks at. And if you look at the committee numbers, they're good for LSU. They're 14th in the net. They're 9th in the RPI. I think they're now 6-2 against quad one teams. And so I actually went back and looked at what LSU's resume is this year and compared it to a team from last year to see kind of what opportunity they had with the seed, and I was really surprised with the result. LSU's resume actually looks a lot like Kansas's last year, and Kansas was a one seed, similar winning percentage over quad one teams. I think Kansas had quite a few more quad one wins, or maybe they were like 14-4 or something like that. But LSU's 6-2, and they've got a chance to get a few more. Their record at home is really good. Their record on the road is really good. The strength of schedule, LSU's at 12. They're 9th in the non-conference. strength of schedule, which is just super impressive. Will Wade, a credit to him for the way that he scheduled this year. And I'm sorry, I actually got a number wrong a second ago. I said LSU was ninth in the RPI. They're sixth in the RPI. They have really done well in the RPI, which Will Wade, if you remember last spring, he kind of went on a little bit of a rant or a little bit of a soliloquy about the RPI and how he kind of understood the formula and his teams at VCU always had good RPIs. And if LSU got off to a good start this year, that they would rank really high.
It's all about manipulating the numbers in the RPI. It's all it is. It's all about manipulating the numbers. And then the teams that you play have to win games. That's why I'm playing Southeastern next year. Why? Because Southeastern racked up over 20 wins. And Jay Ladner's a good coach, and he's going to rack up a bunch of wins again next year because he's got a good roster coming back. Monroe's in the CIT right now. They've rallied at the end of the year, and they've got most of their team returning. So it stands to reason that they're gonna be pretty good again next year and rack up 18, 20 wins again. Not to put pressure on Coach Richard, but you know what I'm saying. So, and some of the other non-conference teams we're looking at, you got to find guys that are going to beat people. Trust me, look at our RPIs at VCU. I know how to manipulate that formula now. We can manipulate that stuff. We can manipulate that stuff pretty good. So, I mean,
in the RPI, and the RPI is no longer used by the selection committee, but LSU's doing pretty good in it, and it's kind of a good metric of where they are, to be sixth in the country, ahead of Tennessee, ahead of North Carolina, ahead of Michigan, ahead of Kentucky, ahead of Michigan State. It's a credit to not only this team, but the way that Will Wade kind of scheduled this year. But the top 10, I think, is a good aim for LSU to aspire for, particularly when you go on the road and beat a top 5 team in Kentucky. But I think there's still a little bit of work to get there. But good question, Matt. Thanks for asking. All right, let's move on to the next question. Kendall Nugent at Louisiana Astro says he has two questions. Will Georgia fall apart after Tom Crean's comments earlier this week? And who has surprised you the most this season on the team and how? So if you missed the comments from Georgia coach Tom Crean, essentially he got a lot of flack for what some people have interpreted as him throwing his team under the bus. He was asked about his team's lack of mental toughness after their loss to Ole Miss, which was their eighth straight loss in the SEC. He said, and I'm kind of I am quoting, but it's excerpt of quotes. He said, quote, "It's all on me because I'm the one who decided to keep these guys on the team. I live with that every day." He goes on to say, "It doesn't mean that they are not great kids, but very few programs, when there's a takeover, when you have guys that haven't done it at any point in time really in their career, a lot of those guys, they move on. That's what happens in a job change, and I didn't do that, so I'm not going to complain. We've just got to keep doing everything we can do to fix it and make it better." Tom Crean got a little bit of flack, a little bit of pushback online, and I think from some parents of Georgia players for those comments. He later apologized. He had a team meeting. He apologized to his team. I think he regrets what he said. But will Georgia fall apart after those comments? I don't think Georgia will fall apart after those comments. Georgia's 1-10 in the SEC. It's probably why Tom Crean said what he said. He's frustrated. If you asked him, they've probably already hit rock bottom for Crean. So fall apart, I don't think is the right word. They need to come together. And you know, sometimes even when a coach says something wrong and there's some hardship in a locker room, it can actually be a galvanizing point. And so you know, I look at things from the LSU perspective. I'd be a little bit wary of that team going into a home game. They're going to be motivated. They're probably not real happy about the perception that's going on with their program. They're probably not real happy with Tom Crean saying that. And maybe they've kind of bonded together over it. Maybe, you know, sometimes teams rally together in strange situations. So I don't think Georgia will fall apart. I think Georgia's already struggling quite a bit. If anything, it could be a situation where they get through together as a team, and it brings them together. So I would keep an eye on that, and that kind of ups the onus for LSU. And when you get a top five win on the road, there is a natural human nature that you could see a team letting up a little bit. Now I know Will Wade and his staff and this team are very cautious of that and very cognizant of that. I promise you the effort in practice and game planning will not be lessened, but there is a human nature to ride. Right on cloud nine and be excited and try to get by on the wins that you've gotten. So I can promise you LSU will be guarding against that. But Georgia will be motivated. They will be ready to play. And so LSU's got to keep a lookout for that. Second question was, who has surprised you the most this season on the team? and how? I think that's a good question, Kendall, and I think I'm going to go with Cavell Bigby-Williams. I expected Cavell Bigby-Williams to have an impact on this team. I expected that he would be a starter for this team. I thought he was a good pair for Naz Reid, but I didn't expect him to contribute in the number of ways that he's contributed to this team, particularly on the offensive end. He's been super, super efficient for this team. He leads the team in offensive rating. He's third in the SEC. His offensive rating's right at 130. He's shooting like 69, 70% from the field this year, which is an absurd number. He's one of the best offensive rebounders in the country. He's the best defensive rebounder on the team, and he's blocking about 11% of opponent's shots, which is the highest number that I can see for an LSU player ever. I think Shaquille O'Neal would probably be up there too. I just don't have the block percentage numbers for him. Those are newer metrics that weren't around back then. But I just didn't expect Cavell to be the dominant force that he has. I thought he would be a very good player who would have a lot of good games, but he is an integral part of this team. Will Wade talked about it last week. He said that he's hard-headed, but he learns. I believe it was after the Mississippi State game. He said, Will Wade said, "I'm hard-headed, but I learned when we play Cavell 20 minutes or more, we win." And so I went back and looked at the splits, and I haven't looked at them updated since the last couple of games. But in the games that LSU was losing, Cavell Bigby-Williams was averaging like 15 minutes a game. Here, I'll pull up the splits right here and tell you for a fact. In wins this year, he has played 420 minutes in 20 games. So that's about 21 minutes a game. In losses, he has played 50 minutes in 4 games. So that's 13 minutes a game, less than 13 minutes a game. So when he eclipses that 20 minute mark, LSU wins. When he doesn't, they lose. He's just been a huge part of this team. His advanced metrics are through the roof. His on-off numbers are really good. He's been quite impressive. In fact, I'll give you some of those on-off numbers. LSU is plus 16 per 100 possessions this season when Cavell Bigby-Williams plays. That's the highest number on the team. They're plus 10 when he sits. So there's a 6-point difference when Cavell Bigby-Williams is on the floor and when he's off the floor. The only player with a higher difference is Tremont Waters, who LSU's plus 15 when he plays and only plus 3 when he sits. So Cavell has the highest plus minus, and he has the second highest on-off metrics. So he's been huge to this team, and he's such a hard worker. He's such a good young man. He's fun to root for, and I've just been really impressed with Cavell and how important he's been to this team. And he's a guy that doesn't get enough recognition nationally for what he does, but I think any team that game plans for him is going to look at what Cavell Bigby-Williams does and realize how important he is, and they got to figure out a way to deal with him because he is a handful. In fact, I gave you those on-off numbers. Let me give you some defensive numbers. When he is on the floor, LSU is giving up less than a point per possession on the season, which is an elite number. Only Tremont Waters is better. He's at 0.98. Cavell is at 0.99, and some of the numbers are pretty staggering. Opponents are only shooting 47.7% from two when Cavell is on the floor, and that number goes up to 53% when he's off the floor. LSU defends the 3-point line better when he plays because they can just extend out to the 3-point line, and Cavell can kind of sit in there and roam and protect the paint. They're giving up less free throw attempts when he's in. I mean, it's every defensive metric that you can account for. LSU is better when Cavell's on the floor. So I expected big things from him this year. I didn't expect him to be quite this good. He's exceeded my even high expectations. So it's a credit to him, a credit to the hard work that he's done, and credit to the coaching staff for developing him. And it's been fun to watch. All right, our next question comes from Mike Moreau at Morehab05 on Twitter. He says, "With the apparent success of the Tigers' 2-point conversions and their abysmal 3-point percentage, do you think Will Wade will make a concerted emphasis on driving to the basket more in the first half of games?" Abysmal is a little bit hard, but it's not far off. I don't think LSU struggled from three. If you look at their numbers from two this season, they're 54.8% on twos. That's 42nd in the nation, a very good number. From three, they are 32.5%. That is 263rd in the nation, which is not good. If you break that down into SEC play, LSU is shooting 51.2% from 2-point, which is fourth in the conference, and 31.8% from three, which is 12th in the conference. Do I think Will Wade will make a concerted emphasis on driving to the basket more in the first half of games? I think Will Wade has made with this team a concerted effort to drive to the basket all the time. That is this team's bread and butter. This is a team that is built on two things offensively, in my opinion. That's attacking the rim and grabbing offensive rebounds. I actually have a sheet here that has LSU's breakdown in terms of points in the paint in each of the last few games. The Kentucky game was actually one of their lowest totals in points in the paint because they struggled so much in the first half. They only had 6 points in the paint in the first half against Kentucky, which is well below their season average. On the season, LSU averages 39 points per game in the paint, and they're only giving up 30 points per game. So they're getting, you know, almost a 10-point margin on points in the paint. But here's just some of their SEC games, their last few games on points in the paint. Arkansas, 42. Mississippi State, 58, which is, I believe, kind of scanning the numbers here. Yeah, that's clearly their highest on the season. 36 against Auburn and 30 against Kentucky. I think they're going to continue to emphasize that. I think another place where that shows up attacking the basket is in getting to the free throw line, and LSU has been exceptional at getting to the free throw line and making free throws this year. They're shooting 79.2% from the line in conference. That's number two in the SEC. They're 76.5% on the season. That's 17th in the country. So they're making their free throws, and they're getting to the free throw line a bunch. They get to the free throw line. Their free throw rate is 44.0. That's second in the SEC. That's basically a measure of how many free throws you shoot compared to how many field goals you shoot. And on the season, they're at 39.7, which is 33rd in the country. So they get to the line a ton. They make a ton of free throws. They're actually first in the SEC in the percentage of points that they get at the free throw line. They get over a quarter of their points at the free throw line, which is one of the highest numbers in the country. And that's an efficient way to play basketball. You know, you hear all the time today that the modern basketball offense is built on the three-pointer and the free throw and the layup. LSU is great at the layup and the free throw. I do think they're a better three-point shooting team than the numbers show, and I do think the numbers will come up. I think, you know, a guy like Skyler Mays is in a little bit of a slump. He's due for a big game from three. I think Javonte Smart is a better three-point shooter than his numbers show. I think Darius Days is shooting the ball better. He's shooting 44% from three in his last five games. I think his numbers will continue to come up. So I do think they'll continue to shoot better from three, but that's going to be built on attacking the paint, getting to the rim, and then kicking it out for easy catch and shoot, as Will Wade calls them, horse shots, 10 toes to the rim. But that comes first by being a team that can get to the paint, Tremont Waters beating off the dribble, Skyler Mays attacking the rim, Javonte Smart attacking the rim, and then kicking it out to open shooters with their feet squared and ready to shoot. So it's a good question. I do think Will Wade will continue to emphasize getting to the paint. This is a team that is predicated on getting to the paint, attacking the rim, driving to the basket. And, yeah, I think if they can start games better in that regard, I think they'll be better off. I do think teams have noticed that and are adjusting the way they defend LSU. They're packing it in a lot more. They're trying to take away driving lanes. It takes a little time for LSU to sort that out at times, and they have sorted it out in games, and they've adjusted well. But, yeah, I'd like to see them start better from there as well, and I think they will. All right, our last question comes from Daniel Watson at Daniel Watson LA on Twitter. His first question, he has two as well. His first one was, is Will Wade concerned about the poor shooting? If so, what are they doing? I kind of answered that in the last one, so I'll kind of let that answer sit for itself. His second question is, rewatching the Kentucky game, I noticed our help defense and defending backdoor cuts has improved significantly since earlier in the season. Any thoughts about what adjustments they've made? I don't know that there's been a wholesale adjustment other than just more emphasis on it in practice. I do remember, and it's fitting enough that LSU plays this team on Saturday. I do remember after the Georgia game when LSU gave up 82 points that Will Wade was very, very unhappy with the way his team defended specifically backdoor cuts. Georgia kind of plays really spread out and runs a motion offense, and they try to backdoor cut you when you're overplaying. And he was really unhappy with that, and I know they worked on it significantly in practice after that. Since then, it has improved. LSU's been better defending the backdoor cut. But I think the biggest thing with this team and its defensive improvement, and if you look at their conference numbers, they're pretty good defensively in most metrics. They're third in defensive efficiency. They're fourth in turnovers that they're forcing. They're first in steal percentage. They're third in defending the three-point line. A lot of their defensive numbers are good or really good. I do think part of that is just a young team growing more confident on that end of the floor. I think defense, to me, the biggest adjustment from high school to college is learning how to defend at an elite level. And I think this team plays hard. I think this team has athletes. I think the biggest learning curve for them has been just learning how to play defense properly and not thinking so much on that end and instead reacting and flowing and playing the principles that they need to play without thinking about it. You know, my dad, who was a basketball coach, and I grew up in basketball gyms, he used to say there was four stages of learning. I'm sure he got this from somewhere else. The first stage is unconscious incompetence. Like, you're bad and you don't know that you're bad. The second stage is conscious incompetence. You're bad, but you know you're bad. The third stage is conscious competence. You're good, but you kind of have to think about it, and you're going to have to think when you're playing to be good. And then the fourth stage is unconscious competence, and that's when you're good and you don't have to think about it. And I think for a lot of this season, LSU was kind of in that second or third stage where, okay, they were bad and defensively, and they knew where they were bad, but they were trying to figure it out early in the season. And then, although I don't think they were ever too bad defensively, they had some bad games, but I don't think they were ever a bad team defensively. But I think they were more in that third stage. They could be good defensively, but they had to think about it. They had to think their way through it. And so you would see it manifest itself in a guy was a step late on a rotation, or a guy was, you know, a step off of where he needed to be on the backside, or whatever the case may be. A guy gets beat off the dribble middle one too many times. And I think now this team's grown up enough, they've learned enough, they've matured enough that they're kind of getting to that fourth stage where they're good defensively, or they can be good defensively, and they don't have to think about it. They don't have to think about, oh, I need to be in this spot on this rotation. I need to contest this shooter. I think they're now at the point where they're processing game plans, they're processing scouting reports, and they're able to implement them in the game without thinking too much. And they can react, they can let their athleticism take over and not think so much and just play and react. And they've kind of internalized a lot of the things that they needed to learn early in the season, and they're internalizing scouting reports, and then they're just going out there and playing. So I think that's the biggest thing with this team defensively. I think they'll continue to grow. Georgia will be a good test for them. Georgia can score the ball. They do run some things offensively that make it difficult on you to guard. I think it's going to be a good test for LSU going into a stretch next week where they got three home games. And if you can get to those three home games at 11-1 in the conference, and you've got Florida, Tennessee, and Texas A&M coming to town, you got a chance to compete for an SEC title, especially with that Tennessee game on February 23rd, which is going to be a huge one. But you can't look to that one yet. You have to look to this Georgia game. As far as previewing that game, Will Wade is set to meet with the media at about noon today. I'm recording it 8 o'clock on Friday morning. Instead of me kind of running through the Georgia scouting report, what I'll do is I'll just run through the stats. We've seen Georgia once already this year, so you're kind of familiar with some of the personnel. I'll kind of run through the stats, and if Will Wade says something super profound that I need to come in and add on to the end of this episode, I'll come back later and do that. But I want to get this out so people can listen to it. But quickly, my scouting report on Georgia is just going to be some numbers. Their best player is Nicholas Claxton. He's their leading scorer. He is their leading rebounder. He is their leading assist man. He is their leading steal man. He is their leading shot blocker, which I don't know how many players in the country are doing that, but he's a good player. He had a good game in Baton Rouge last time out. He and Naz Reid kind of went back and forth. He had 15 points. He had 9 rebounds. He had 3 assists. He had a few threes early in the game. He's a good player. He's a really good player. He's a future pro. And LSU is going to have to guard him without getting in foul trouble. We've seen that LSU's bigs have tended to get in some foul trouble recently. And so they're going to have to defend Nicholas Claxton without getting sit to the bench with 2 fouls early, because that'll put them behind the 8-ball. Their second leading scorer is Rayshon Hammonds. He is 12 points a game, 6 rebounds a game, and right around 2 assists per game. He's shooting 37% from 3, so he's an inside-out guy who can play around the rim and play in the paint, but he can also step outside and knock it down. Tyree Crump is kind of their 3-point shooting specialist. He's at 10 points a game. He's shooting 38% from 3. He's a guy that can get hot in a hurry. You'll probably remember Derek Ogbiede. He's one of those guys that seems like he's been there forever, just a handful on the inside. He's averaging 10 points and 6 rebounds a game. He's a guy that I think, if I remember off the top of my head, he's played LSU well, particularly in Georgia. And now that I say that, I remember earlier in the season, Will Wade, before the Georgia game, going off on one of the reporters here for asking about Georgia. And I think it was one of those things that Will Wade was trying to make a point to his team through the media. But he said, hey, we haven't beaten Georgia. Nobody in that locker room has beaten Georgia. So we cannot go in there assuming that we're going to win the game. Ogbiede is a guy that has been a part of a lot of those wins over LSU. And he's a guy that can can make some noise inside. He was a good partner to Yante Mattin this year. He's a good partner to last year. He's a good partner to Claxton this year. So Georgia's look. This is a team that, yeah, they're 1-10 in the SEC, but they've got talent. I like Tayshaun Hightower. I saw him at the SEC tournament last year and thought he had a chance to be a good player in this conference. And he's had some better games of late for the Bulldogs. He scored 18 points against Texas in that win over Texas. He's had he's averaged about 10 points a game over the last three. He hit three threes against Ole Miss. So he's a guy that's got a lot of size at the point guard spot. He's good defensively. He's a young player. He's learning. But I think Tayshaun Hightower is a really good basketball player. This is a good team. This is, you know, another 1-10 in the conference. But they just beat Texas just a few weeks ago. And Texas is a potential NCAA tournament team, number 43 in the net. Georgia is a team that is capable of beating good basketball teams, and LSU is a good basketball team. If they want to be a great basketball team, which they showed they can be on the road against Kentucky this week, they're going to have to go and take care of the teams at the bottom of the conference too, because if you look at the rest of LSU's schedule, they've positioned themselves really, really well. They're halfway through that six-game stretch that I talked about earlier in the year, and they've won all three of them, and they're going to be favored in the next two for sure, Georgia and Florida. And then you've got Tennessee at home, which Tennessee will probably be the favorite in. But then the Tigers close out with four games that they're going to be probably the favorite in all of them. The only question mark would be Florida on the road on March 6th, just because that's a road SEC game. But Texas A&M at home, they'll be a favorite. Alabama on the road, they'll be a slight favorite, I think. And Vanderbilt at home, they'll be a heavy favorite to close out the season. So LSU's got a chance now, 10-1 in the conference with seven games left and a lot of winnable games in there. But winnable and winning them are two different things. So let's hope the Tigers can take care of business. Like I said, if Will Wade says anything today that I want to come back in and add in later, I probably will do that. If not, this will serve as the end of the podcast. So thanks, everyone, for your questions. Again, anytime you want to send in questions, please send them to me at Cody Worsham on Twitter, at Cody M. Worsham on Instagram. I really, really appreciate all the feedback. I really, really appreciate you guys helping this podcast grow. It's been a blast for me so far. I'm looking forward to continuing to grow it as well. Next week, I do hope to get some player interviews. I do hope to get some other interviews as well. One of the questions I got on Instagram was when I will get Kent Lowe on the podcast, and all I have to say to that is stay tuned, because I want to make that happen. And maybe I'll just walk over to Kent's office right now as I finish recording and see what's up. But until next time, thanks for listening to Boot Up, the LSU Basketball Podcast.